a lot of what's behind the class I teach, you know, we talk about the complete female cop and everybody's like, oh, what does it really mean? It's just allowing us to be ourselves no matter what, regardless of gender. But say, there's always a seat at the table for everybody when I'm at the table. Right. And the only person I'm pushing away is somebody who makes somebody else feel uncomfortable. Like, I'm going to love you where you're at no matter what. And my goal is to always make someone come up behind me and be much better. That's true success.
Hey guys, if you missed out on the last conference in Nashville, Tennessee, you don't want to miss out on the next one. It's April 28th through May 3rd, Orlando, Florida, the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center. You made a mistake missing the last one. You don't want that to happen again on this one. 5 days of some of the best training you're ever going to experience packed into one event. We have an early bird special right now, $50 off. Use 24 early bird on our website, streetcop.com. Look for the conference, click the link, register today. If you want to get significantly better at this profession in 5 days, don't dare miss out on the 2024 Street Cop Conference.
111. You trying to be a street cop?
Hey, everybody, this is Heather from Street Cop, and I am here at Street Cop headquarters in the podcast studio, and today we are doing a roundtable with some officers from around the country. So you all know who I am. I teach the Complete Female Cop and I teach the course Be the Change. And if I could just take a minute and I will call you out, because I don't know if you guys can actually see the same situation that I see as far as where you're located. So Andy, do you want to start, introduce yourself and let us know how long you've been an officer for?
Sure, my name is Andy Garcia. I'm an officer in North New Jersey, Hudson County to be specific. And I've been on the job now 6 years.
Okay.
And I ride patrol. I'm a patrol cop.
Oh, okay. Thanks. Okay, Jeremy.
Well, I'm at the Madison County Sheriff's Office in Kentucky. I've been there, it's going to be going on 3 years now. And then prior to that, I had around 5 years at the Kentucky State Police. So I was a trooper and then now a deputy with the K-9 division.
Okay. Jonathan?
My name is Jonathan Melton. I am a lieutenant over patrol in Moody, Alabama, just east of Birmingham. I've been here at Moody for 10 years and got about 15 years total police experience.
Okay. And my girl, last but not least.
Yes, my name is Michelle James. I am from Spartanburg County Sheriff's Office in Spartanburg, South Carolina. And I've been in law enforcement for about 10 years and I'm a special victims unit detective.
Awesome. What I think is really great about this platform right here is I was so excited when Frankie sent me the names. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know all of them. And you're all from all over the country, which is super cool. It's really one of the greatest blessings of being a part of the Street Cop family is just getting to meet great cops from across the country. So listen, the floor is yours. I'm here at your service. Whatever you guys want to ask, it's all you. And the next hour or so is all yours.
Ladies can go first.
All right, go ahead, girl.
So this is something that I've kind of struggled with. How do you battle the bitch persona? And that's the only way that I can describe it. Like, you're strong enough to show that you have a backbone, but then you also have to have that caring, compelling side. And sometimes that's taken as weakness with other men that I work with. So like, how do you balance that?
That's a really great question that I don't have a universal answer for, because I think it's so dependent on who you are as a person and who you work with and where you work. But I struggled for a long time in my career trying to figure that out, because either you come off as a bitch, you know, because you're too aggressive or too assertive, or you might be seen as weak because you show that emotion, right? Like you just said, I have come to complete terms with the fact that I am an emotional person and I'm okay with it and I thrive in that and I'm all right. And I'm also the first person to call somebody out on their assumption of who I am because of those emotions. Right. But that's easier said than done, right? I've been able to do that as I transition to into a formal role as a supervisor. I always felt I had to prove myself, especially when I first got on the job. We didn't have any females that had ever stayed. And I walked into an agency that already had these preconceived notions about me based on false rumors that have been started from a previous agency. So I didn't even know it. And I walked in and I was like, why will nobody spend any time with me? Why don't I get invited to coffee? You know, it can be a lonely spot to be a girl, because there's this line that you don't want to cross. You kind of want to be one of the guys, but you don't want to be one of the guys, you know? And we're taught to fit this mold. And I think that's really starting to transform, where as women get more and more into this profession and listen, it's always forever as I'll be alive going to be a male dominated profession. But I think that you can see the advantages of having a female come in and that emotion, right? The way we can relate to victims, the way we can relate to our men, and in a resiliency component, I think is really important. The difference with my team and the way that they feel comfortable talking to me as a woman is a lot different than I think some of the male supervisors. But I also think that at 43 years old and someone who's been on the job 20 years, I am now looked at more as like a mom figure instead of that threat of a, you know, female who might, you know, take somebody's husband, because, you know, now I can hug my guys and be like, I love you and I miss you. And their wives or whatever, like, oh my gosh, we love Heather too. Right. And it's fine. But if I was this 23-year-old chick when I started and I came and I was like, oh, hey, you know, it's just, it's different. So I think you have to manage your own expectations. You have to be okay with who you are and really allow yourself to feel comfortable just being who you are and not trying to fit a mold. You're going to have to prove yourself. And that might happen for your entire life. I think, and Andy can actually really understand where I'm going with this. In New Jersey, we're lucky in a sense that you can't work past 65 and you can't get hired after 35. So what I'm seeing traveling the country is that there are so many women in law enforcement that are dealing with that really old school male mentality of these 85, 90-year-olds. No offense, because there's probably great ones out there. 85, 90-year-old guys, you're still on the job because they don't have to retire and they're still doing things the same old way. And they're not understanding the value that everybody as an individual can bring in, especially that why generation. Why are we doing this? Learning more and so on and so forth. So I'm not sure if I totally answered your question because I don't know if I know how to, but at least here in New Jersey, we have that change no matter what. Like, you have to retire by 65 and you can't get hired, you know, after 35. So, you know, I think that's an advantage for us because you kind of weed out the people who don't think women belong here. But good question.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you think it's harder to have people follow you as a female versus male leadership?
I don't know, because I don't know what it's like to be a male leader, to be honest. You know, I think it depends on your team. And it depends on who you are as an officer before you transition and who you become and how you show up every day. I think that I've proven myself enough as a person who's willing to get dirty with my guys where I don't have to worry about that physical aspect. But my leadership skills lacked when I transitioned into a sergeant's role. You know, I went from being on the same squad with my people to then leading my people. And I didn't have the right mindset. We don't train people to be leaders until they're almost in that role. And so that's one of the issues that we have to deal with. We need to start training our people earlier to be servant leaders from the get-go. Like, you decide to be a cop, but you should be all in on leadership. So I don't think it's harder for me as a female. I just think it's different. But that's a great question. Do you think it's harder to be led? But have you ever had a female leader?
I have not. My field training officer, when I first started my career, was a female.
Okay.
She was awesome. She was hardcore. Like, we got in multiple fights. She knew the laws. She just knew how to be a street cop. And as a young officer, that was really cool to me. But over my career, I've worked with females that maybe weren't the best or were in law enforcement just to prove a point that a man can do it, I can do it, but they weren't the greatest and still had good leadership. So other than an FTO, no. I know from talking for you or with you that you always express the leadership qualities that all of us want, no matter if you're a male or a female.
Thank you.
And I think people follow that. And if they buy into that or they buy into that culture, that's where you get these teams that go out and do good work.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've had a horrible female supervisor, and not in the agency I just left, but my first agency. And you know what? I see women in this profession often be the mean girls. And it's so upsetting. Like, they're actually worse to us as women than the guys. Right. You guys are kind of scared of toeing that line and kind of stepping over sometimes. Girls are not. They are vicious. And they've worked hard, so hard sometimes to get into a certain role or to be a supervisor or to be recognized for what they've done that they hold onto it so tight that they feel that if another woman comes in, it's going to take away from who they are. And that's really a lot of what's behind the class I teach. You know, we talk about the complete female cop and everybody's like, oh, what does it really mean? It's just allowing us to be ourselves no matter what, regardless of gender. But say there's always a seat at the table for everybody when I'm at the table. Right. And the only person I'm pushing away is somebody who makes somebody else feel uncomfortable. Like, I'm going to love you where you're at no matter what. And my goal is to always make someone come up behind me and be much better. That's true success.
Heather, I was going to bring up your class because I actually took it.
You did. One of the very few men.
Yeah, I was actually going to bring that up. Another point I wanted to make, where you referenced about guys' wives meeting you. I talk to my wife about you all the time, and not in a weird way, but I explained that we've met together to train, or we've trained in the same gym once or twice. The way you give off your persona and as you lead and what you're doing with this company. But also in my agency, I think females just like to be part of the group in a way. There are certain boundaries that shouldn't be crossed. Is there favoritism? Because there are some chivalrous men, no matter how brutal we may be to each other sometimes. Yeah, there's still some chivalry. We still tend to protect some of them a little more, you know, but as long as they feel like they're treated as just another officer and they're brought into a group, I think I've seen at least the females I work with get along with us much better. And we have a very, at least in my squad, we have a very good tie with the one female that's in my squad right now. And she loves us all and we love her, but we treat her just the same. You know,
I love that you said that. I love that you brought that up, the chivalry aspect of this, because it took me a long time to be like, why aren't you letting me get my hands in there? Or why are you stepping in? And in realizing, and not until recently, till one of my guys said to me, it's like, hey, LT, we know you can handle yourself. You just don't have to. Like, we've got this for you. You don't need to. You know, you've already proved yourself. And that is that big chip on the shoulder that a lot of women come in here with. They want to prove themselves, and we have to prove ourselves over and over again. And I think it's important for women to realize that just because we can doesn't mean that we necessarily have to. And if you're with the right group of guys that are just looking to protect everybody, why not let them? Like, I'm the first person to pull out some mace and be like, nope, I don't need to touch you. I'm just going to spray you in the face and then put you in cuffs, you know? But then transitioning into what you just talked about, and Jeremy, you can talk on this too, like with jujitsu, especially bringing that into something that I didn't start doing until I was almost 42. Man, the street cred I got from that alone, just showing up and getting on the mat, but the intimidation factor, and then also, you know, meeting these people's wives and being like, yeah, you know, I have your husband in my closed guard. Like, it's the most intimate position that you can be in. There's a trust factor there, and you have to present yourself in a certain way. You have to not, you know, be messaging them at all hours, and you have to have that respect factor too. So it's understanding who you are and how you communicate, but effective communication is key in all of that.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, she was mentioning on like the jujitsu, and it's like, what I worked with Josh Hayden. He's like world class and super elite about it, and got in his gym. And then, you know, I've been choked out by plenty of women, which is, you know, at first you're like, this is like embarrassing, but in reality of the game, it's, there's no gender in that, you know, and, you know, and being real, being realistic. I mean, when you roll with a female, you don't want to touch something or a body part. So you're going to be like, oh, I didn't mean to. But it's like, she knows that just as well as, you know, if she touches you or whatever, there isn't, it's not inappropriate. It's because, you know, you're helping her gain as well as, you know, as a male, both factors of that. And that was something like I had to get over, like mentally and physically, you had to like get past that awkwardness, I guess. And that barrier. And then that's just, it's just crazy how like you sit down and talk about it and be like, hey, let's be real. Like, it's going to happen, get over it and move forward. And then you kind of break the sexual gender or female, male, whatever. And there's no, you know, same thing with going into law enforcement, you know, it's just like a crew instead of, oh, you're this or I'm that, you know, and I think it separates that instead of, so.
It's a really great perspective.
Right. I got humbled by females by getting my ass kicked since I started training. And that's what takes that little thing away. Once you realize, I mean, my gym has a not world class, but a state class, 105-pound, 17-year-old, 3-stripe purple belt that's a wrestler. And she humbles men left and right in the gym. She's outstanding. And things like that get you over it real quick. Her dad's also a teacher, an instructor at our school. So, I mean, he's there watching, but at the same time, he knows she can handle her own. And she is probably one of the sweetest girls in the whole school. So that's awesome.
I'm just going to piggyback on that just, and then, cause you know, when you do jujitsu, all you want to talk about is jujitsu. So we'll let the other two be like, sorry. But what I love about jujitsu is that it is the great equalizer, right? You can step on the mat as a blue belt or a purple belt and have someone who's a black belt. So that's like your chief. That's how you look at it. If you want to look at, you know, command structure, and, you can still win. And that's what's great. And you can have that person beat, and you kind of come on. It's the greatest level of that thin blue line family, that brotherhood. I love it. And with training as a female, we used to do defensive tactics before I trained, and a lot of it was jujitsu based. And I was like, oh man, I feel like I have to go 110% because I don't want my guys to think that I can't win. Right. And then I'm not going to be there to have their back. And I had no training. So I was like, just all over the place. And then once I had some training under me, came in, and I was standing across from my captain, and he like, we're doing a little bit of sparring. And he like, go, I'm like, dude, they're just boobs. Like, they're just boobs. Like, let's go. Right. But I was finally comfortable saying that and being in an environment where we could go. And I don't even necessarily prefer to roll with women anymore because I'm not a little girl. Like, I know most of you have met me in person, but I mean, I'm 5'9". I mean, I'm not thin. I'm, you know, I have muscle, and most of the girls I'm against, and I'm not good enough yet to understand how to like lay off enough. And listen, criminals are non-discriminatory when it comes to gender. You know, I can handle most women that I deal with on the street, but it's the men that I really need to train to be able to protect myself and others from. So I love jujitsu, and that's my plug. And there's that. All right.
I want to say something also on this topic. My husband is also in law enforcement, and he's like Billy Badass. And he has always said to me, you know, don't worry about what others think about you as far as being a woman is concerned. If you can have my back when I'm calling for help, that's all that matters. And I can tell you 100% that in certain situations, me, the female, is who that they would want to come to have their back, as opposed to, you know, somebody else on the street, because not all departments have standards for, you know, their officers to stay in shape and stuff like that. So some places think that, you know, maybe they don't want the female to come, but for sure, I know that in my department, at least, that I am one of the people that people would want to come to them. And I think getting past the having to prove to other people and like accepting in myself that like, I know that I'm capable has kind of helped me with that process.
Yeah. It's self-identity and internalization of who you want to be and being okay with it. Right. We're so hard on ourselves, and I'm not just saying women, I'm saying officers in general, right? Mm-hmm. We show up every day and we have an expectation of being perfect and not messing up and not failing. And that expectation leads to this type A ego that's really hard to push back down and understand that we are human and we're allowed to fail, and we don't need everybody to like us, right? Not everybody's going to, they're not going to respect us, they're not going to like us. So when I go home at night, if I can put my head on the pillow and know that I did the best job I could, or I learned from whatever mistakes I had, it took me like 17 or 18 years to get there. I mean, that's just me being really honest. I've always cared about what other people thought about me, because mm-hmm. I thought I was living a life where people should respect me and like me, but not everybody does. I'm not everybody's flavor of coffee. You know what I mean? Some people like pumpkin spice. Some people like white lattes. I don't know what to tell you. More of a pumpkin spice.
At the
spice
end of the day, girl. Who cares? Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Other people's opinions don't pay my bills. Mm-hmm. So what else?
As a supervisor, I guess the question I would have for you is, everybody and try to find out what their niche is to help them kind of move forward that. Because I guess sometimes everybody comes in and they look at what other guys are doing and like, oh man, I want to get into the dope game, or I just want to write citations, or I like to do investigations. And then every once in a while you have those unique guys that are very well rounded, but you know, how do you help, or what is your process on helping those find their niche and what they should be better at or what they're good at, and then trying to push them toward that? Because, you know, I guess as a supervisor.
Well, you know, it's really about knowing your people and showing them what you can do too. Right. So it has to come from a place of being genuine and investing in somebody's success. Also, it comes in understanding who you are. So my 100% is like 100%. Right. Most people get to about 70% of my 100%, and that's their 100%. So understanding that my level of work and drive is not everybody else's, and loving them where they're at, setting goals with people that are attainable, but something they have to work for, and showing them how to put a plan in place. So it's so funny that you just brought this up, because I just recorded my first course for Street Cop University that's going to be coming out. And a lot of it was about assessment and goals and things like that, and understanding your people's strengths and weaknesses. And I'm just using weaknesses because it's easier to say that than areas that need improvement. But I really don't like the word weaknesses. I don't feel like I have any weaknesses. I feel like I just have areas that I need to improve, right? We don't use a weak hand to shoot anymore. We use a support hand. It's kind of the same thing. But I have to really have the self-awareness to know where I am doing okay, and then allow them to be in an environment where they feel like it's a culture where they can come to me if they need help. And knowing where my people are at. So for an example, I have a newer officer that comes in and they're like, listen, I'm really, really excited about locking people up for DWIs. You know, I had a cousin that was killed by a drunk driver. This is my passion. I want to be the best in the agency at it. And that's where as a leader and as a supervisor, you have to step in and say, okay, I love that. I know your why. That's where your drive is at. So let's put some goals in place. You're probably not going to do that this year. I'm not going to say that you're not, but you don't have standardized field sobriety testing training. You don't have this. You don't have this. You don't have this. So this guy in this agency, this is a really good strength for them. I'm going to put you with them to mentor, and we're going to practice, and we're going to review your body cams, and I'm going to follow up with you in 3 months. And not because I'm micromanaging you, but because I want to see where you're at and where I can help you succeed better. It's about open communication. It's about letting people know that you're going to love them where they're at, but that you have expectations of them too. If you don't communicate the expectations you have of your team, they're never going to be able to live up to them. So there's that. Like, this is the foundation, guys. Hey, like, I know not everybody loves to do property checks and like community policing stuff, but we have to get this done in a little bit, because everything we do is community policing engagement. I mean, it all is. Every traffic stop, every arrest, every hello at the front desk, every time we walk in for a cup of coffee and someone looks at us, all of it is community engagement at the very core of what we do. When you explain it to them in that why sense, especially with the generation that we have that needs it explained better, you're going to get more buy-in. You're going to get more internalization. And I tried to focus more on the team. So we were able to transition from one chief to another, and we were able to communicate the fact that some of our people have different strengths and areas of passion. And for them to be the most effective as a team, we didn't want individual stats to prohibit them from pursuing the things that excite them, that are passionate. So within our team, we started to identify, well, this person's really good at first aid calls, and this person's really good at crashes, and this person loves motor vehicle, and this person really loves the in-depth investigations in this. How can we bring you all together to make it effective where all of you can play a role and feel like nobody's being left out or given the crap calls? And it had to do with communication within the team too. So it really is the basis of effective communication. It's teaching your people how to goal set, which I think the newer generations coming in are already learning those kind of things in school. So it's a little bit easier to incorporate that mindset. It's those guys that have been on 20, 25 years or kind of retired on duty, and you need them to be a part of the mission and the goal. And you just say to them like, hey, this is the role you're going to fulfill. Is that the role that you want? And and letting them lead in areas that excite them. Great, great question. Really great question.
Can I add to that and actually piggyback a question of mine off of that?
Please.
Okay, so 100%, I started nodding my head what you said, because the first thought I'm not, by the way, I'm not a supervisor. I'm going to be 40 this year, so I'm a little bit of older cop than I would say my department. My department's turning into a very, very young department. But I noticed that knowing your people is huge. Because, yeah, you know, a lot of agencies, I'm sure, around the country, they do it by, you know, when you put a squad out there, they do it by seniority, whether it comes to sectors or posts or who handles what job and what type, what area of town that they're set to patrol. But if you have a top-notch DUI guy and you have a DUI, you're going to have him respond and help and assist. I mean, it's just common sense. Same way that if you have a couple guys out there and you're dealing with a very large person that is very combative or strong, you're not going to send your two smallest officers over there. You know, logic and ration says, let's send a couple guys that are a little more big or a little on the bigger side, a little more intimidating. Maybe they have some fighting skills just in case, not to initiate a fight, but in order to, you know, protect officers from lesser injuries, protect that person from lesser injuries. So I think knowing your people, their skills, and even when it comes down to training, there are some times in some agencies that I know that they send people to training that they don't even ask for, that they don't want, that they're not, again, this is all based on opinion and experience, but they're not qualified for. I mean, if you have a guy with 2 years on the job, 3 years on the job, you train them to be a reserve officer behind the desk, and he's never had one proactive motor vehicle stop, why would you send him to FTO school? When you have a guy that's sometimes out there all the time, engaging the community, trying to pull over cars, trying to stop pedestrians, really good with communication with the public, why would you not consider someone like that? What if that person's even asked to put in for training and been denied? Like, what are we doing? And I think that's a universal problem. It's not like a state problem. It's I'm sure there's agencies all over the country experiencing things like that. And so going
before you get in your question, because I love what you just said, and I just want to expand just 1 second. When you talk about knowing your people, you need to understand their limitations too. So we have the agency I just left is so diverse. It's unbelievable. It was an amazing blessing. But I have one guy that was just utilized all the time for translations because he speaks Spanish, right? So the things that he was passionate about, he wasn't even getting to do because automatically, just because he was born in another country and now speaks Spanish, we are basically like pimping him out to other agencies that are asking over our county radio for it. So you also, as a supervisor, have to ask the question, like, is this something you actually want to do? You know, or your field training officer, when they've had 3 or 4 people in a row, they might be phenomenal. They might help your agency have the best officer come out of that. But maybe they're tired. Maybe they want to be in a car by themselves for just 6 weeks. So knowing your people and communicating with them and understanding like, yeah, I enjoy this, but I'm not doing this because I have to do this all the time. And saying no to people for your people is also really important.
I agree. I mean, unpacking something like that could probably take hours, but I agree with that 100%. I think also knowing your people to the point of their specific skills. You may not have somebody that's more of an introvert. Maybe they're not good at being out there constantly engaged in conversation. And like you said, everything we do is community policing. I know that I'm pretty much a decent, effective communicator. Why? If I pay attention and I go back sometimes and watch my own body cam footage, right? How I engage with somebody. I love getting those extended hands of saying thank you or thank you so much or you're amazing. You know, one time when I arrested a guy because I was able to explain a little bit of how he had the right to remain silent and Fourth Amendment and Miranda so well and explain the whole process of an arrest when his friend who was on scene was a total a-hole. This guy called me the Jesus of police officers. I'm like, dude, I just kind of learned my job and I'm explaining it to you step by step. You know, I treat you just like any other human. You know, we're both human. And he goes, wow. It's like, if anybody should be arrested, they should be arrested by people like you. But his friend on scene was calling me a racist and you're the problem with society and all this, that, mind you. But the guy that was in cuffs and processed at our police department thought I was everything, you know, thought I was so professional so well. But those are things that are they're not seen. If everything goes according to protocol, that body camera is not reviewed. You know, maybe it might be reviewed, but it's overlooked. It's like, okay, yeah, whatever. You know, another job, another arrest. But things like that are so important to use, maybe not only for training, but as a reference. Like, look, this officer was able to do this. Mind you, some guy just might be there, but like, you're under arrest. Put your hands behind your back. Click, click. And then they read Miranda off a sheet. They don't even know it off the top of their head. Do you understand your rights? And the guy's probably like, yes, you know, he signs a little paper and then there's no other conversation. I don't mind spending 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the end of a call with anybody and explaining what just happened, giving them a little window into our eyes or our world, because they're much more appreciative. I think it was Tommy Brooks's The Honor Game. I took it and man, did I learn from that. And I've talked to him just like through DM and Facebook a little bit about it. And like that class has really opened up. You know, it's amplified, you know, like, did you watch X-Men? I'm sure.
Yeah.
Professor X, when he gets in the little thing with his machine and he's able to contact everybody. I don't feel like I could do that, but I feel like this just amplified my my skills and it sharpened up a lot of things that I would love to work on and continue working.
Tommy Brooks is awesome. I love when he says my name, he's like, Heather.
It was so great.
Call me and say my name every once in a while? Heather.
I try to explain that class to people and I go, if you could get past the Boston accent, because I'm from the only thing that separates me.
I don't want to get past the Boston accent. Really? I could be like, can you just talk? Like, can we just, I love it.
Right. Where I work, the only thing that separates me in Manhattan, New York, which is Boston's rival, is the river. So, you know, so Tommy, that accent, I don't hear often. And usually when people hear it, they don't like it. I think it's phenomenal. I have a cousin from that Boston area. So she had that accent. I'm sorry, Heather. Let me get to my question.
All good.
A lot of time.
We're just going to edit all that out. No, I'm just kidding. Frankie, don't edit that.
So what's the best way to deal or combat in a respective manner, of course, administrations that have very little street patrol experience, setting the standards for the department training, defensive tactics, patrol uniform standards, and why is there such a disconnect universally with them sometimes and patrol?
Comfortability. That's it. So this is, I mean, again, this is a lot like how Michelle asked a question. It's so unique to the agency, where you are, who your leaders are, who your team is. You know, you just got to keep doing what you're doing, and you got to be the best cop you are when you go out there. It's difficult to make change with an administration that doesn't understand that change is okay. Because for so long in this profession, we're like, no, let's not change anything. It's not really our choice. I mean, just look at things like George Floyd. I mean, and I'm just going to use New Jersey as an example. Our use of force compendium already had said that we're not allowed to use chokeholds or positional asphyxiation unless it's a deadly force authorized situation, right?
So it's and like pulling the trigger.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. So, you know, I feel like New Jersey has been doing it really well. We've already incorporated defensive tactics. We now, starting January, are going to have mandatory defensive tactics in there. I go to some states and they only have to qualify once a year with their handgun. You know for a fact there are officers in that agency that only pull out their gun once a year. I mean, how effective are you to be? The one thing that you carry that can absolutely take somebody's life or protect yours, you're not going to be the most efficient on. It just doesn't make sense to me. So I think training really is a personal thing. I think we have to get over that mindset of that it's our agency's responsibility to train us, because it's not. This is our career, and our career is life or death. So we have to take that on ourselves. We have to be the best versions of ourselves. Pay for what, and Andy, I know that you're like the epitome of paying for your own training for everything, because I see you at everything all the time. You don't even ask, you just go. But I was the same way. And I was always nervous to be like, oh, it's my day off. Maybe I shouldn't go to training. How's that going to make me look? Again, just to circle back to what Michelle said, that perspective or that perception of who we are. Listen, at the end of the day, I know I need to be better here, so I'm going to do better. And when you've got an admin that is against certain things, especially when it comes to being proactive, that's really hard, because you want to be the best cop you can. And I mean, what can I tell you other than to just leave? Right. And I know that sounds so much easier said than done. But if you're genuinely working at an agency where you don't see change is going to happen, and it always does, it comes in ebbs and flows on who's going to be leading, you know, the agency. I mean, leave if you're not happy. And it's becoming more commonplace throughout, you know, unlike in other states where it's an at-will state, like Jersey doesn't do that much. Right. We don't just up and leave because we have pensions and we have seniority and we have money issues. But like, you can just get let go at any time. In certain states, it's unbelievable to me. We don't have to deal with that. But, you know, admin is admin. Having conversations, coming at them with proof, putting things in writing, coming at it in a way that is going to allow them to not feel like they're less than, right? You've got some really overweight chiefs out there. Do you not want to put on, you know, stuff to get on a mat with people and roll around, because it's going to show how out of shape they are. So again, comfortability, like what are they going to look like? So help them look great doing it. Make it seem like it might be their idea. Hey, chief, I know that this is part of our mission statement. I know that we're getting this from the town council or whatever. I have an idea. And it was inspired by something you said, right? Like stroke that ego a little bit. There's nothing wrong with that. And it's really effective, especially with the old timers. So what do you think about that, Melton? I think you're the only other supervisor on here with me, right?
Yeah. There's a whole lot going on here, from talking about sergeants leading their guys on patrol to a lieutenant position. Years ago, when I was a young cop, I read an article somewhere.
Not that many years ago. You're still a young cop.
No, I'm feeling it, especially after these football games. But I read a long time ago that the most important job in law enforcement is a patrol sergeant, the most important job, because they're the ones that are going to motivate and keep the road guys happy. And we all know that patrol is the face of a department. They're the ones with your city name on the side of the car or your county. They're the ones that are answering the calls. They're the ones that are going to the violent crimes. These are the people that are in the face of the citizens every day, and they really generate the trust or the hatred towards the police that we have. That's great, but you still have a supervisor over those street cops. And if your supervisor's not doing their job, or they're not motivating people, or they don't know the personalities of these officers, they're going to fail, or you're going to get complaints, or reports won't be good. And so the way we run here, we got four shifts, one sergeant each shift, and they have three officers under it. And I've told all my sergeants, get to know your guys. Okay. You have to know their personal lives, their wives, their kids, their personal struggles. Don't go out and share it with everybody else in the police department, but know your people. And if I know my strengths and weaknesses, I know which sergeants are stronger and weaker in certain areas than others. My sergeant should know which officers are stronger or weaker in different areas. I think when you start talking about some of these old heads out here that overweight chiefs or whatever, we got lucky down here. You know, we just had a chief change in April. And our chief is really good about eating with the shifts or going up to roll call, or I'll be up at the patrol building and the chief walks in and he just talks to people, you know, and people see the chief out in front of them. Now, granted, we're a little bit smaller. We're not a multi-thousand person agency or anything, you know, but it shouldn't matter. It should step up. Even these big departments. I had a brother-in-law that was a captain in Charlotte. That ran a night shift. He had 300 people over him, but he was always out about talking to street cops as the captain. You know, that's important. And me and my chief were talking yesterday. We were talking about the younger generation coming in. And a lot of us think they may feel entitled or they may feel like we owe them something. And as we really kind of got discussing it, Maybe it's some of us old guys that maybe we feel a little weak if we have to explain something.
Mm.
I think we do owe them something, and I think they should feel entitled. And I love that there's that shift. And it took me a little bit to love that. But listen, it's a privilege to have this job. It really is. But I think so many people walk into this career, just try to get a foot in the door, and then they're not in the right place and they feel stuck. So yeah, as a supervisor, our people should feel entitled to support, love, a sense of family, understanding. Knowledge. What'd you say?
Knowledge,
our experience. Absolutely. And, you know, that whole Y generation, there has to be the explanation of, listen, when shit hits the fan, I'm not giving you a why, but I'm going to create a culture where you can feel like you can come back and ask me about it, right? We have to set that culture. And something you said right at the beginning about the sergeant's job is to make sure that his officers are happy. I'm going to challenge that and switch it, because I agree, but in a different way, because it's not my job to make anybody happy, but it is my job to empower you to be happy and to allow you to take ownership of being happy when you're here. Because we all know there are just some miserable sons of bitches in this profession, right? I'm not making those people happy. And I have to be okay with that. I have to be at peace with that. Oh, well, sucks to suck, as my sergeant says all the time. That's his phrase. Sucks to suck. And, you know, I've turned it around and I'll be like, why aren't you happy? And they can't give me a reason. I go, okay, well, then that's on you. Like, how are you showing up with your attitude? Because there's only one thing that catches on faster than a good attitude, and it's a piss poor attitude, right? Like, it just is. So I love that you brought that up.
I agree, and I'm not responsible for people's happiness. It's a weighted scale to an extent.
Yeah,
I want to keep my guys happy. If you're a proactive officer, you're smart, you're knowledgeable, you're writing good reports, then yeah, absolutely, I'm gonna send you to a street cop class. Okay? Yeah, but if you're the guy that sits there and plays Clash of Clans for 10 hours behind an oak tree somewhere, then why do you deserve?
Yeah.
You know, and some people feel entitled that, well, I work here, I should do what I want. Well, you know, sometimes that's not always the case.
Agreed.
If you want to do the bare minimum, then expect the bare minimum in results. Don't expect to get promoted. Expect to go to the good classes. You know, but I do think leadership, though, needs to understand that we do have knowledge and experience, and we need to explain to these 20, 21 year olds that maybe don't have life experience that, hey, this is the way of the world. And I'll agree 100% with Andy. I always challenged my guys that when you arrest somebody, it could be the worst day of their life.
Mm.
It could be a school teacher that got a DUI and they know they're probably going to get fired. But I've always challenged my guys that, and it's not 100% across the board, but I've always challenged my guys, if you can get a thank you for arresting somebody, if you can have somebody say, man, I never had a cop treat me respectfully like you. That should be our daily goal, that every interaction should be a positive interaction. Now, do we have to be a-hole sometimes? Sure. Do we have to use force and violence sometimes?
100%. You can say asshole, it's street cop. You can,
you know,
whatever you want to do.
But I think that should be our goal. I mean, yeah, we have to be hard on people at times.
Yeah.
But once we're in that office, once we're contained, once we're man to man or woman to woman, woman to man, it doesn't matter. If you treat these people with respect, a lot of times you can get that positive interaction and help change their mind. I think it's important.
Yeah. And I think the transition with the different generations is that what we need to realize, and this is a message for all the supervisors out there, so y'all better listen, right? So I think one of the biggest things that I learned is that even though I knew that everything that I had been successful with and had achieved, the newer guys coming on didn't know shit about me, right? They had no idea that I led in DWIRS or that I can effectively communicate with people or that I write a great report or I do all these things. They just see the lieutenant's bars. And it's just as much my responsibility to get out there and do the things I'm asking them to do to show that I'm capable of it in order to help them be better. And I think that's really important as a supervisor to remember. Like, they have to earn my trust and I have to earn theirs at every level.
Yeah, it's hard too. The patrol sergeant's the most important job in police work. The patrol lieutenant is the busiest job in law enforcement.
I think that depends on your agency.
Well, yeah. For me, it's definitely the busiest. I've done the same thing. I just told my chief the other day, I think I've gotten to a point since April when I got promoted that I know what paperwork I got to do. I know what admin duties I have to do, but I already miss the street. I miss being with the guys, and my guys love it when I come out and work. You know, at first there's usually the little, oh man, there's a lieutenant in the car with me. I gotta behave or whatever. And I'm like, no, man, let's get in a chase. Let's go arrest bad guys. Let's put felons in jails. And, you know, we end up having some major incidents happen. And then just the position I was in, I was able to kind of take point on an incident where a guy had a knife. And I think it just garners a lot of respect, but they look at you and they know, hey, this guy can come out and work too. And it helps makes, and it does make your job easier. If my guys respect me and I respect them, it's a two-way street.
Yeah.
Respect from the bottom up, but respect from the top down too.
I think it goes back to what you were saying about how the younger generation feels entitled and they do deserve that entitlement. A lot of the old heads can't explain stuff because their answer is that's the way we do it. That's the way it's always been. Well, that's bullshit. And I think that the younger generation being able to call them on that is going to help, you know, change that is necessary. And that kind of segues into the next question I have, like how for me, I guess a middle-aged cop, like I'm 10 years in, my husband's 20 years in. So I kind of fit in that middle range. Like how can I help these younger people that have those why questions that these older people are saying just because? How can I do that without stepping on toes and pissing people off? Because I'm very good at that.
Yeah, I'm pretty good at that too. I'll answer from my perspective what I've found is effective, but then I'd really love to hear from Jeremy because he's our young puppy and see what would work for him. All right. So I think teaching them how to ask the right way is really important because our younger generation doesn't know how to communicate as effectively because of cell phones and social media, right? So having conversations face to face can be difficult, and understanding that tone isn't really the same thing in text messages is huge. They're very uncomfortable having eye contact face to face communication, which in turn makes them weaker in investigating, interviewing, so on and so forth. So you have to bridge the gap, and that's kind of your role. And you have to set the example by saying, hey, listen, what here do you need to understand or know or whatever? And if you have a supervisor that's above you that might respect you or respect somebody else, just say, hey, listen, I know this isn't the way we've always done it, but I know your goal is to make sure that we have the most successful squad. I think they could really benefit from hearing how you knew that and your experience and why and where that's coming from. Anytime you ask a question that helps other people understand too. Like, you're not just saying why, but you're giving your why to your why. It's so empowering to people. And again, it allows people to feel heard and seen and understanding. I know what one of my areas that need improvement. I'm not necessarily the best listener because I have attention deficit disorder. And so I like forget things that I want to say. Like, I usually always have a notepad. So for me, I have to really sit here and I have to be like, okay, the phone is down. What exactly do you need to do? And then I turn around and say, here's what I'm hearing. Am I answering you correctly? Like, was that what you really intended? And just bridging that gap, being the example for people. But I hope that answers your question, because I think it's important. And not taking offense to somebody asking why and stepping in and saying, hey, man, LT, he wasn't asking why because he was questioning you. He wants to be as good as you. Can you explain why? Right. Like, you know, make that. And what about you, Jeremy? What do you think has been like a deterrent for you as a newer guy that's come on?
Yeah, I would kind of piggyback that, because like, I remember being like 2-3 years in and I asked why, and it was like crossed arms, sit back in a chair. And it's like, that's what's wrong with your generation. You all just ask why. And I was like, it wasn't more like questioning the authority. It was like,
you're trying to learn.
Yeah. And I was just so confused. So then that stuck to me, and that's always been so bitter to me, because that's been 5 years ago. So having that, I'm like, no, you know, in law enforcement, it's an ever-changing game. Like, we know that, you know, as this moves forward, you know, the rules and regulations for us get harder and harder to put people away in jail that need to go to jail, obviously. But they're making it harder on us to do those things. So they're taking away our tools and things. So the people who are new to it are learning things that the older people don't have as those tools. So it's kind of like, I was more or less just trying to ask why, in a sense of, hey, what is there a certain way you do it that way? And it certainly backfired. So, but also to kind of like piggyback other things, like, as you're in your department, there's other way, like utilities and places, departments you can go in within your agency that you can do, like HIDA or task force and things like that. But what I've seen is, there, it's so secret squirrel, and you're like, I like doing the dope game, but to progress, I want to know more. But those people that are in those spots are there for 20 years, and it's like, well, how do I get that position? And they're like, oh yeah, you just wait a few more years or wait out 10 years. And you're like, okay, cool. Like, that's the only the knowledge you're going to give me. And then like, I don't know how to serve a warrant on a house, or if I get a traffic stop, like, how do you gradually make that increment? And that was like something to stroke the ego of street cops. I went to one training because I love doing interdiction. Like, I was called to do an interdiction on the highway, and I was like, I don't even know how to do interdiction. I wouldn't even know where to start. And they're like, yeah, just go watch cars. So I was like Googling, and somebody's like, dude, go to street cops training. And I was like, okay. So I complained to the agency, and I was like, hey, get me in this class. And they're like, okay. You know, like, I mean, I've set my tone at my agency. So I go to the class and I come back, and it wasn't 4 days later, I get on the interstate and I know what I'm looking for, because they utilize and teach you the proper way. And instead of just like hiding something from you, like, they give you the tools and you can go forth. So I go out on the interstate and get 10 and a half pounds of weed. Although it's marijuana, it's still the quantity, you know. And it was just crazy how you can learn that so quickly, and like, there's no hiding from you. But when there's other alleyways in your agency, you're just like, how do you get there? And no one wants to help you. And that's just such a struggle, just for my area, because I've talked to a lot of people of my age and stuff, and they're like, man, I want to do this and this and this. And I get, put your time in, obviously, but it's the knowledge that I want to learn. And people are just like, those people in those positions are a lot older, and they're just like stuck. And it's just like, it's kind of almost, I guess, demising in a way. Because you want to be there, but then it's like, I don't want to be a guy 20 years on and look down at the other guys and be like, oh, it's, yeah, you know, this is just a washed position. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Yeah. I guess.
Like, you won't have a connection with them.
Almost. Yeah.
It's kind of like what Michelle said, right? So how do you prepare other people? And I think that this ties in really well. If you had not said why that one time, and you said, hey, listen, I'd really love to understand why, because I want to do it the right way, right? It's that approach. And we have to teach our people, no matter where they are, about approach and how to effectively communicate. But again, you could also turn to that guy and be like, listen, and his fear when you went to him probably was that you were going to get so good that you were going to take his spot. That was his, you know, putting your time probably background. And I'm just assuming we get that a lot. People earn something and they covet it and they hold on to it. And they don't want to give away their secrets because they don't want to be pushed out to pasture. So, if, I mean, maybe approach and say, hey, listen, I see what you do. I think it's incredible. I want to be like the best resource for you. Can you give me how you succeeded? Like, what was your succession plan to get here? Like, what are some of the things that I could be doing that I'm not doing? So someday, if the position is available, I can help. And then the other thing, and I know you already do it, but I'm going to encourage and say it out loud anyway, because I want other people to hear it, is when you get the training that's effective for you, don't be that guy that doesn't pass it on. Turn right around and be like, hey, there's a new kid. I know they're super into this. When I can, I'm be like, hey, can I ride double car with that kid? Hey, this girl's super into SWAT. Like, she want, like, I'm going for an extra training. Like, do you want to come along and just pay it forward? Right. That's really what it's about. Pay for. Don't be that guy that's like, oh, I got the training. Now I'm going to go out and be so, you know, overtaken by it.
I think one of the biggest things too we have to remember is those people that are asking the whys. We have to explain, look, this didn't happen overnight. I cannot just give you this information and tomorrow you get, you know, the 10 pounds of dope off the road. Like, it's going to take time for you to do it. So in them asking the why, maybe present it in the way of, this is not a quick fix. Like, this is a process you have to go through. This is why people say put in the time, because you have to learn it so you can be proficient in what you're doing.
Yeah. And also, I mean, I think when people have asked me how I've succeeded at something, it takes me so, I get so off guard because I'm like, oh man, I didn't realize that I was an example of what people want to be. So then I need some time to reflect on how did I get here and what did I do that was successful? Where did I fail? And so I've really learned to be like, you know what? I would really love to revisit this with you. I don't really know how to answer that at this point, but I'm going to get back to you and circle back if I forget. Like, that humility, that ability to be transparent and be able to show where you failed a whole lot. Right. And, you know, I'll say to them, I go, I'll show you where I failed and where I screwed up. Like, you could do the same thing. I'm not going to hold it against you if you do. The same thing with my kids. Right. Like, I want to protect them from everything. I don't want them to make mistakes. But, you know, with everything that I've fucked up in my life, like, here I am right here loving where I'm at. And so I'm grateful for all of it. And I have to give them the ability to feel that way too.
Right. No, so, I agree.
Dealing with what you said with interdiction and actually wanting to go seek out training, I thought that was phenomenal, because then you showed the effectiveness of the training immediately. Same thing happened to me with my very, very first street cop class, and it was in 2020. And within weeks, I went out, and two nights in a row, I had two great motor vehicle stops. And it wasn't even an addiction. It was Dennis's case law class of New Jersey, because I was just interested. It's like, shit, I don't know how to do my freaking job. So I took that course, put it to practice, and two nights in a row, I got two great motor vehicle stops based on like a small tidbit of that class, which he touched on reactions, people's reactions in cars. And I got two really good busts, and I got a commendation for it from a deputy chief that's no longer with us and my favorite captain. Little did they know, it was because of that. And then, you know, COVID happened, the major shutdown and all the crap that happened. So it wasn't really as effective. But I mean, one course, my very first, put it to practice weeks later, got something two nights in a row, got a commendation for it. You know, little did I know, it was a training they didn't even send me to, something that I did. And from what I know, everything went picture perfect. So, I mean, I wanted to give you a really good thumbs up on that and say that it works. It's effective. It's just not out there. And if I could get into a question, Heather, why do departments treat officers that would choose to seek their own training like it's a bad thing? There's not necessarily like a policy in place that says don't go to your own training, but it's like ingrained and it's like tattooed in the culture that, oh, no, you can't go to your own training. You know, we don't do that here, or they won't recognize it, or you're not allowed is the rumor. But when I look up the policy, there's nothing that says, highlighted and underlined, you are not allowed to go to training. But for example, like on officers on their own time, they could seek to be professional chefs, they could sell real estate, they could manage properties, they could become professional day traders. But an issue is raised on the idea of bettering oneself, seeking their own training that they refuse to send you to for whatever reason. They could say they don't like the company, they could say it's too expensive, they could say anything, but why does that happen?
I don't know why it happens, but I'm going to turn this back to the officer that wants the training. Like, what, why are you going for the training? Are you doing it to be the best version of yourself, or are you looking to have it be part of your training resume to get promoted, right? If that's the case, then just get over it, right? Training is supposed to be about being personal with your profession. And listen, there are some caveats to that, right? If you want to go to some SWAT school that you need to be sponsored for, that's a different story. There's a liability for your agency. What if something happens? There's that. But if you want to go sit in a street cop class and listen and learn, like, foundationally, what are you doing it for? Are you doing it to boost your training resume? Are you doing it for the wrong reasons? Or are you really, and not that that's the wrong reasons, I don't mean it like that, but I'm saying, like, you should be seeking training to better yourself. Just like if you wanted to go be a professional chef, that's something that you're passionate about. And so it's kind of the same thing. Like you know, like Jeremy's canine, right? Still? Yes. Jeremy, still canine. Okay.
Puppy reference. I was going to knock you on that, but oh well.
Knock away, buddy. But yeah. So again, if he was interested, and I get this question, like, especially from women, because I think they feel that they're being left out of certain roles, but I think that they really don't still realize that we're still such a minority number wise, that it's really about numbers and what we get to do and where we're going. And, you know, we can get in this whole conversation about how women really do end up having to choose whether or not they want to be a mom or a cop, because we get left out of things for 9 months while we're pregnant, right? We're not allowed to be on the road. We're not allowed to have those experiences that can kind of promote other people to have the training to go places. But, you know, I think when it comes down to training, it's absolutely personal. If you want to be a canine officer, like, go to Josh's class and learn all things canine. Doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to become one, but it's going to better prepare you if an opportunity opens up for it. You might be like, my agency never had a canine. What am I like? I'm not going to go to a canine class. I don't have that opportunity. Like, it's not even there. But if it interests me, maybe I will go. Maybe it'll help me understand better when I can call for a canine from the county. Again, I think people take this job for granted way too much. They don't realize that just because, like, I think once cops, and I'm not saying all cops, but there was this mindset of when you graduate the academy, you've kind of arrived, right? Mm-hmm. And here you are and you have your career and I don't really have to do anything else because I got it. And then you get to a point where you're like, oh man, there's a next step and I haven't really been preparing or doing these things. But I think we need to get in that mindset of, we can lose this job at any time. Right. Again, I use the analogy of this job being a marriage, and that someday we have to get divorced and we don't get to choose when that divorce is going to happen. And we are all replaceable. So why not just be the best prepared for anything you can be and not take it for granted? But yeah, I don't have an answer for you on why agencies are like that. I think they want to be in control. I think there's budget items that come in place. There's politics. There's a whole lot of factors that you're never going to even maybe know about. So why does it matter? And if you want to go to training, just don't flaunt that you're going if it's going to be an issue with your agency, and just apply it where you want to apply it. You know, I mean, it's really that simple. If you hold on to what's aggravating you about the things that you can't do, you're going to hold yourself back from the things that you could be doing and you should be doing.
You know, I think some of it from the top down is probably a little bit of jealousy, too. Because nobody cares if you're going to spend $200 to go to culinary class. Okay, so it's not a budgetary constraint. If I want to go to a street cop class and pay $300, what's the difference from that to me paying $300 for a cooking class?
That's my point, yeah.
But yep. that lieutenant or that captain, whoever's over your training, they don't care if you're a good cook. They don't care about that. But what they do care about is, oh, he might be a better cop than me. Or he might come after my job. I think there's probably either a feeling of weakness there or a feeling of jealousy there. I get no joy and no pleasure in making somebody miserable. Like I've never understood, and I've worked for bad administrations, not here where I'm at now, but in my past, I worked for an administration that just nitpicked everything and was doing audits of body cameras, trying to catch you speeding. Like it breeds this just horrible atmosphere of hatred. Nobody wants to work. Like we would joke and put green cardboard paper on our blue lights, or yellow cardboard paper on our blue lights, so that green lights like security. Like that's how upset people were. I mean, it wow. sounds ridiculous, but we were paid security guards. And I just think if you're going to pay your $200-$300 to go to a street cop class, do it. Maybe, you know, if you're in an environment where those supervisors are trying to keep you down, don't tell them. You got your certificate, go do your job. But everything boils from the top down sometimes. Supervisor has to be real careful with that.
Question to the supervisors, I guess. So say you have a guy who's upcoming, who's had a few years, he puts his, you know, he's made his, I guess, his position in the, you know, agency. And he could make that position where, you know, where he's going to put a little bit of competition, you know, those things. So how do you utilize that, as in just basically whether who gets that position? You know what I mean? Like, you know, if he's that competitive, I mean, you're not going to put LeBron James on your bench.
I'm not putting LeBron James on any team. I'm a Michael Jordan fan, and well, we can fight about this all day.
Me too.
The current roster, obviously, if I could pick a team, obviously I'd pick through the history. But that's what I'm saying. Like, if you get these guys have these assets, and you know, that you know, do you like the competition in your agency, and you do utilize that to the benefits of like moving people around, or do you just like leave it until that guy leaves, or how do you go about that? Like, how do you fix that, or how to you know, when you're in a position over him and you see that, you're like, no, this guy's upcoming. And I mean, he could be a great asset to this department, you know, and this guy's really not producing as much. The one that's been there for, you know, 15, 20 years, and you got a guy on five who's like biting at the bit. Like, do you put the competition there, or do you just turn a blind eye to it? Like, you know what I mean? That's what I was kind of talking about earlier. So how do you go about that, and what would you do, and what steps would you take?
I can say what we do down here in Alabama, and it's different everywhere. Small departments, big departments, don't matter. It's easier to do in small departments, but I've always had the belief that you put the right people in the right positions. Mm-hmm. If your strength is in interdiction, then you're going to be my interdiction guy. And if you're going to go out on your own time and ride with some of the heavy hitters down here in the South, I'll allow it. Okay. We just sent one to Texas for the conference, or not Texas, down to New Orleans for the interdiction conference. You're hanging out with heavy hitters. You're learning. Go do it. We'll pay for your hotel. It's easy. When it comes to supervisory positions, if you're the qualified candidate and you're the best candidate, then you're going to get the position. I think administrators all across the country are putting their friends in spots.
Yes.
I think they're promoting their friends, or they're getting the motorcycle detail or the canine detail just for whatever reasons. And they may not be the most qualified. And I think that's a dangerous game to play, because it breeds people being upset. You put the person who's most qualified in that position.
I think a lot of agencies, this is where politics comes into, which that's the biggest load of bullshit in this position, this entire field.
You know, ruins the whole profession.
We don't have major politics down here in my area, but we just have the belief from the chief down that, hey, if you're the most qualified person, you'll get it. We're actually having a promotion interview today for the sergeant's position over the school resource officer. So the most qualified person, and there's three good candidates, and that's going to be a hard choice, but the most qualified one will get that position.
I understand.
I can kind of give you some things that I've seen progress through my career at my agency that was really helpful in that whole equity aspect of what people believe that they are entitled to just because of the work they're doing. Clear expectations of what it takes to get promoted and to get into an area is really important, right? So understanding that you might be the greatest person that goes out there and writes a million tickets, but you don't communicate with somebody well, you don't do this, you're not well-rounded. Like, we're going to look for ways that you've initiated things within the agency, the way you've looked great or made the agency look better. Like, as long as you put that out there, like, it's not going to be based on this training. It's not going to be based on this. You know, you have to do a minimum of 5 years to get promoted or whatever. But I think it's also really important to have somebody who can have tough conversations with people, because there are people that think that they deserve things that they just do not deserve. And that's on every level with every amount of time on. So being able to say, yeah, I understand you're a little pissed off that the guy with only 3 years on is getting a detective spot when we've never let anybody in there with less than 10 before. And you're probably thinking that you deserve it right now, but in the past few years, you've done nothing but show up and do the bare minimum. When this kid has come in here and he's closed out every investigation, he's asked every question. And because of that, right at this time, this is what he's deserving. But I can tell you, there's a position that's going to open up again. So here are my expectations of somebody that I'm going to put in there. And it has absolutely nothing to do with time on. And that's a really hard thing to transition out of, especially when you have politics and that good old boys club and those things that have been past practice being moved into certain situations. But you also have to let people know that, hey, listen, you're a go-getter at 5 years and you may not have seen this guy do a lot the whole past couple years. There are things that you don't need to know and why, but for 7 or 8 years when you weren't even here, he led this, she led this, they did this. And yeah, so it's taken some time for this opportunity to open. And yeah, I'm going to put him in there and I don't need to necessarily have your approval, but I'm going to explain why so you understand. Again, I think like transparency is so huge in equity and expectancy when it comes to our people. And you're going to have a lot less chips on shoulder, still hurt feelings, because that's who we are, if we can have the conversations on what our expectations are and what we're looking for. That's how I've seen successful transition.
I'm not going to dive in deep to it, but I've been, what you just said, I've been in that position, but I've become very, very comfortable because of the knowledge I've sought out on my own and because of my interactions with the public and the reactions I get back from the public, that I stop caring about that. Or I'm trying the best as I can to not care about those little things anymore, because I know the reactions I've gotten from my community and the people I've interacted with, the people I've spoken to, and those thank yous in this thankless job, or those, you know, the way you see somebody, the way you could change somebody's mood, the way you could give somebody clarity or understanding, or just have them be so grateful for you. All that shit overrides any of those feelings that I've ever had. And it's because, not for nothing, and it's just, it sounds like cliche, but it's because of guys or a company like Street Cop or someone like you, someone like Ellie, or taking Tommy's course or listening to Dennis's podcast so often. All those things is the one that sharpened me up and said, you know what? What I do out there, that's way more freaking important than having to care about the nonsense that I have to deal with back there, or how much politics has an influence in my department. And yeah, it's not easy. We all struggle. Like you said before, also, I'm sorry, Michelle, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said before, it's frustrating, but I've just decided, because this career for me is a calling. I've been through a lot of shit in life. I have a lot of life experience, which sometimes I even get made fun of. It's like, oh, you have a story for everything. It's like, well, I'm going to be 40 years old. And if you knew my story, if you know everything I've been through, everything I've overcome, and what I'm doing now to continue better myself, then you know what? Maybe you'd have an understanding. But a lot of people sometimes, and I hate to say it, are just plain Jane, or they come right out of high school into this profession. How is a 21-year-old with a gun and a badge that, you know, is getting all those thin blue line bet tattoos and buying these ridiculous things, you know, how are you going to go tell a middle-aged people that are fighting, that have been married 23 years to DV, that, you know, basically tell them anything? I come from a house of two divorces. I've seen divorce impact my siblings. Maybe I have a lot more insight into that window than that person does. So going to a house like that and getting a very good reaction and getting people to be appreciative of me overrides all that shit. And I've become comfortable in that.
I'm just going to challenge that real quick, because we just hired somebody who was 20 years old when we hired him. And when I tell you that he is, and actually the other kid who came in too, but Pano is absolutely amazing. And I'm going to shout him out here, because at 21 years old, he is incredible at speaking with people. He has so much life experience. And so I think we give people a raw deal when we look at them just based on their age, right? He has brought more to the table in our team than some people that have just retired that had 30 years on and had no life experience. And I think as supervisors and people within agencies that have been here for some time, we have to like let go of those preconceived notions based on age, gender, and all of that, and really be thankful for what everybody brings to the table and let it be. Like, I feel bad that you deal with some of the things that you deal with in your agency, or that anybody does. I wish I could just take everybody here and we could start our own like street cop police department.
Yes.
As nation, right? Wouldn't that be amazing? Like Tom Rizzo for chief, please. And, you know,
amazing book.
His book Kamikaze is so great. But I'd put on a walking post to work for him, because he's so amazing. But yeah, I just, you know, I think it's important to understand that, because, you know, there's all these preconceived notions about people and we just have to let it go. And you have no idea what anybody's walked through. And I found that to be such the case with women. Like, especially in this profession, there's so many things that have happened to us on why we come into this, whether we're victims of molestation or victims of domestic violence or witnesses to it or sexual assault or just like the mean girl shit. Like, I think that we genuinely come into this profession a lot of times in order to make sure that we can make a difference for the positive. And I can only speak for women. I can't necessarily speak for guys. We talk about it a lot more than men do, right? Especially when it comes to the victimology of who we are. Men kind of put up those walls a little bit because they don't want to be seen as weak. So I get it, but I think it's important. Hey, everybody. I'm Heather Gologlich, instructor here for Street Cop Training for the course, The Complete Female Cop. This class is not just for females. It's not just about gender-specific issues. It was really formed in order to allow people to find that passion again for policing, to understand that their self-identity doesn't need to be changed just because they want to fit the mold, and to really help bring about change. Change in the profession, not just for women, but for everybody, to be heart-led servant leaders. If you're interested in taking the course, you can visit streetcop.com and search Heather Gologlich, and you'll be able to find it. I'm also really excited to announce that I have a new course coming out. It's going to be called Be the Change. Some of the great feedback I got from this year's conference in Nashville was that the men in this profession didn't feel like they wanted to take a spot away from the women that they work with for my first course that I teach. And so I was really able to sit down and put together a course about culture change and building effective teams and learning about a growth mindset versus stagnation mindset, pushing forward and just being the best cop that you can be, both personally and professionally. So really excited for that to be coming out soon. Keep an eye out for it. Thank you all so much. Stay safe and be the change. All right. Does anybody else have any other questions or anything? Dive deep. Like, let's go in.
I like what Andy said, that, you know, you may not get a position or you may see with these people, but he says, I'm going to brush it off. I'm going to go do my job. And I think on a supervisor's aspect, we do watch to see the reactions of people if they don't get a position, because it's really going to tell a lot about your character. And you may be a qualified person. There may be one more that's a little bit more qualified than you. But if you don't get that position and you go around bad-mouthing that officer or that sergeant, or I'm going to make this person's life miserable, that's probably not going to bode well for you the next set of interviews. If you just let it brush off your shoulders, yeah, you can be upset. Go home to your wife and fuss and get mad. I mean, that's fine. You have a right to be upset that you didn't get a position. But you don't really have the right to come out and badmouth everybody and make everybody miserable because you didn't get something.
No, you're absolutely right. I've done that to my wife, but not necessarily about a position. But I, on the contrary, I couldn't agree with you more. I encourage those people that have come on after me that get moved to positive positions. I say, dude, or whoever it is, reach out to me. If I could help you being here before you in any way, I'll help you out. I don't give a shit what it is. Just let me know if you need me to come back you up. If you need some of my reports, just ask me. Any insight I have, ask me. I have no problem helping out. And I also applaud them. I congratulate. And I don't congratulate to be demeaning or to poke fun of. I genuinely, there's an officer that's been with us a long time. His father was a Port Authority cop who died in 9/11. Mm-hmm. And we're the same age, but he has a lot of time on me. He's been on 20 years. And we disagree on a lot because he is very old school mentality, even though we're the same age. But I called him yesterday and I was almost in tears because he got the call to get promoted to sergeant. I'm so proud of him because I love him so much. And we butt heads, but we do agree on a lot of things. But we butt heads. But I just called him to say, dude, I love you and you're freaking awesome. And I'm proud to have you in that position and you deserve it. So, you know, I do things like that. I go out of my way to even check on people. We had an older cop, 24 years, and now we have cancer. I've had cancer before. I called him regularly just to check up on him. I guarantee over 90% of the department after he left to get treated, nobody even checked on him.
It blows my mind that, and I know Dennis has said this before, I heard it at the conference, like we're all on the same team.
Exactly.
We get enough grief from the media and from the public to an extent, like why are we trying to make everybody in our own profession miserable? Why are we backstabbing people? Why are we making fun of people, throwing people under a bus? It doesn't make sense to me. We're all on the same team.
I mean, and we're our own worst enemies, right? Like, let's talk about, like, we'll go back to the whole Laverne thing with that female and the cops that she worked with. I have no problem talking about how pissed off I was, right? And it took a while for people to be like, yeah, but what about the guys? And then I come to realize when I travel, like, you can get fired from places for saying no to a chief if he asks you for a sexual favor as a female, like fired and blackballed. Right. And like, what about that? Like, did anybody stop to think about the fact that, like, maybe and granted, right, like there were comments made by her, but whatever. But I'm not judging anybody because I don't know every single detail. And it took I was that mean girl. I used to judge. I did it. I've been judged. I know it sucks. But like these people that sit behind these memes on social media and they make fun of their own. Like, what is the point? What happens if she turned around and she had killed herself? I know there are people that would have been like, oh man, shit, right? Like, did I contribute to that?
A valid point going along with what you're saying, and I cannot remember for the life of me what the post was about, but it was on the Street Cop page, and you and I both kind of commented the same thing. Someone was asked, it was a female, I think, asking for some sort of advice, and everybody
was a separate group. She asked for a separate group for women or whatever that she could join.
And everybody was dogging her out. And I went to my husband and I said, normally I don't post controversial things. However, this is Straight Cop and I think they can fucking handle it. I'm about to go off. And he was like, do you, Michelle? Let it out. And then it made me feel so good that, like, you also did a similar thing. Because again, women have to fight so fucking hard for a voice. And then once we get our voice and we have that, you know, comfortability to be able to be who we are, we get smacked in the face for having it. And I think that it was absolutely disrespectful the way that people came at her. Because what if it would have been a guy asking for something specific? Like, would they have taken it the same way? And I think that the hardest thing that we all have to come to realize, and you've said it time and time again, we are our own worst enemy. Yes, they're shitty cops, but they're also really good cops who do shitty things and say shitty things that don't have to be said.
Let's just address the elephant in the room, because there are going to be guys that are listening to this right now in the conversation that you and I are about to have, Michelle, the comments you made, and they're going to be like, here we go, like, chicks complaining about how they have to work harder for everything. That's not necessarily what we're trying to say. And we're not trying to segregate men from women. And if you're sitting here and this doesn't apply to you, like, we love you. Like, thank you to all the men out there that have done nothing but help support me. This entire company, I was the first female and I've never felt more supported ever in my entire career. But I think as women, we have to also understand that men can't know what they don't know. Right. So for the one guy who made a comment on there and he's like, oh, don't be so sensitive or don't take it so sensitively. And he hadn't read the comment that I deleted where somebody was like, oh, your place is in the kitchen. I deleted that shit. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
And I was like, listen, I was like, we are going to take it personally because some people on here are really do mean this. And we are looking for something. You know, you guys had your own place for, you know, however many years before women were allowed to be cops. Right. Yeah. And I'm not going to come to you and talk to you about what it's like to qualify after having a C-section 8 weeks ago. Like, you have no value in that for me other than get your support. Right. Like, there's just little issues that we just, like, if you guys deal with prostate cancer or something that's like male specific, like, you're not going to want to necessarily talk to a chick that never will have to deal with that. So it's the same thing. So again, it has to go back to grace and patience as the underlying, right? There are women out there that definitely have a chip on their shoulder because they are women and they had to work hard to get here. And what they don't understand is that while we're coming into this profession and we're asking for men to try to be more understanding of who we are, we also have to turn around and be more understanding of who they are and their history and the process they've been through. And you know, they say that whole phrase, like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, we are, and we are transitioning, but we have to have the grace and the patience to allow people to fuck up, like, and say the wrong thing and not automatically start a lawsuit and not be like, oh my gosh, like, he said this and I'm offended. Well, like, people can be offensive, but you choose to be offended. And I cannot take it when, I don't care if it's a man or it's a woman or whoever you are, comes in and doesn't give anybody the opportunity to correct their mistakes because they may not even know that they're making a mistake. So we have to, like, take that edge off. We have to let go of that litigious undertone of this fucking profession. And we have to realize that at the end of the day, all of us are human and not everything that comes out of our mouth is going to be perfect. And if we don't want to be judged to the highest standard possible by everyone who doesn't know our situation, we can't turn that around and hold that expectation of others. It's just grace and patience in everything that we do.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I think that's a really great place to end. What do you guys think?
Absolutely.
I think, I think we need another day where we can talk about mental health issues.
I would love to do a part two. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Frankie, you hearing that? They want to do one all on resiliency and mental health. I would love it. I would love it. I would love it. I don't know. Jeremy, you all right? You with that? You okay with that whole topic?
Yeah, no, I would kind of like piggyback with like, affirmation and compliments to that, because like I grew up with a house full of women, like no male role model up until I was about 15. So like learning women at a young age was very beneficial to me in my career now. So utilizing that and just understanding emotions, you know, it's obviously wired in me differently because I am emotional. So like that just comes from the women background aspect of it and just being caring for my sisters and, you know, and my mother at the time. But it's unique because you see intense and feel the tenseness and body language a lot differently from a male's perspective, having women pose a lot. So I give a big compliment to that because like women can read body language, I think, better than men can. And they pick up on emotions, but it's like small little emotional things, like a flutter of an eye before they cry. You know what I mean? But they hold back their tears. But a woman can pick up on that. Like, no, what's wrong? Tell me about it. You know? So something that's put in my career is like communication with women is a lot easier for me. And you get a lot of information if you just show them you care. And it's so crazy how easy that's happened. And just to piggyback, like other, you know, things that'll never get appreciated or seen in law enforcement is like that person being like, thank you, you've helped me out so much. Like last night I was able to talk to a woman who, you know, she's a user, and I talked to her and I was like, look, this isn't about you going to jail or anything. Like, I don't want to take you to jail. I want to help people that can't help themselves. And I was like, here's the phone number you can call. And I gave her my work cell phone, obviously. And I was like, call me and I'll find you like a rehab or something to help you. And like, she cried on the side of the road. And then next thing I know, like 4 hours later, you know, what I wanted to do that night, I got into like getting the dope off the streets. But it was just like,
that's what stood out.
And so it's unique how to pick up on those behaviors for women to utilize in this game. So
it's such great impact, right? Like, you never know when it's going to impact people a certain way. So we just have to treat every encounter with everyone, including our peers that we work with, right? We put so much effort into saying the right thing on camera to the people we interact with outside of our agency, and we don't give two shits about what we think or what we say outside of our out of our mouth within our home, our second home of law enforcement. If we balance that, if we're able to put forth the same effort and care and respect that we do to the public, you know, when the camera's on, as we do to the people that we work with, like, I would think officer suicide would go down. I would think people leaving the field would go down. Retention of qualified officers, which is really important. And then the recruitment of qualified officers would be huge.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, this is just a kind of like a side note. I would never known what, like, you know, modern day was Riz or game or whatever. Like, I didn't talk to guys to talk how to talk to girls. Like, I talked to the girls to be like, how should guys talk to you? You see what I'm saying? So that's how I like, you pick up on that. Like, you don't go talk to some guy and be like, hey, how do you pick up girls? Like, I would go to the girls and be like, how would a guy pick you up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just kind of did it backwards. Like, most people are like, how do you do that? It's like, no, I just go to the source. Like, what you want to know, just go to the source. Just be reasonable about it. So.
Love it. Well, thank you all so much. Seriously, I feel really blessed that you guys chose to spend part of your time with me. Like, this is just really, really humbling. I know it seems sometimes that street cop instructors are, you know, everybody kind of puts us up on this pedestal sometimes. And it's very surreal for all of us because we're just not those people. We want you to know that, you know, we are where you're at. We weren't there. We are there. Like, we are you. You are our family, regardless of whether or not you are technically employed by street cop. Like, you are our family and you're part of the street cop family. And I'm really grateful that you guys took the time to be here today and to create this. Thank you so, so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey guys, check out our upcoming training at streetcop.com. Don't forget, we have 50 instructors nationally teaching a variety of topics. These are the best classes you're going to experience in your career. We make sure of it. You're going to love it. I guarantee you, you're going to be thankful that you went. Check us out at streetcop.com for all upcoming classes in your area.